It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
That's right. We looked at each other and we didn't know where to see if who of us was going to start. That's right. You're tuned to a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR 855 on your AM dial. Big up to James and In Your Face for another fantastic program.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we've got a big one for you. You might be tuned in at 3cr.org.au.
Or through 3CR Digital.
Or
your Preston ceiling fan, your state-of-the-art surveillance helicopter in the sky.
Yeah, a little bit quieter recently, but which is nice.
Oh, yeah. But look, I just want to start off by telling listeners, announcing to listeners, that the station's going on a break in a couple of weeks for a few weeks. You know what we like with dates. I'm hopeless on it, Adam.
And I'm terrible at calendars, so.
But over the summer, we'll be coming in every week as per normal and breaking into the studios and doing our Live at 5 show every Friday. But also, we're going to be doing a series of one-hour shows on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
From 9 till 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings, while Asia Pacific Currents and Palestine Remembered take their well-earned break. Both shows, which we've appeared on various occasions, to talk about the different things we talk about. So we're going to do those one-hour shows, which will allow us to go a bit deeper than normal, and also as part of the music program, Rotations series. On the 4th of January, I'll be playing some of Leon Russellson's tunes and talking to Leon via the wonders of the internet from his lounge room in London.
Can't wait for that.
On the 4th of January. So that's going to be one to listen to. And that show and all our one-hour shows will be linked through the Friday Rave page on 3CR. But that's coming. As it may.
And if a Friday Rave is not enough for you, you can join us on Saturday mornings for Saturday Kick-Ons.
Saturday Kick-On. Friday Rave, Saturday Kick-Ons.
That's right. So where are we going to start today, Jake?
Well, you were talking to me about the more looking you've been doing at the F-35 parts FOI. And I've got to say to both you on air, but also to point out to the listeners, how good it is to have somebody else looking at this shit, which means I don't have to all the time. I can look at other nasty shit.
Yeah.
But what have you found out about the F-35 parts?
Yeah, so I happened across some FOI disclosures that were including the exports to Israel from the period of 3rd of June this year to the 19th of August. And I do have to say again that it's a big props to the folks at Declassified Australia who have been doing so much work in releasing the information about exports as well as information about the specific flights that the parts are being exported on, and they continue to. So implore listeners to keep checking on Declassified Australia's website and supporting their work as well.
And that is declassifiedaus.org.
That's right. And so the latest FOI release that just came out a couple of weeks ago, there was two parts that stood out in particular. So they're listed on as the AMS EDTR and the CTOL nose wheel ASSI. So I'll get into them in a moment, but they were both followed by the terms V3HI and ML10A. So without a shadow of a doubt, these parts are F-35 parts, components. So the AMS EDTR refers to an aircraft memory system.
By their own code books.
Yep. And so that's with a cockpit mounted enhanced data receptacle, which is the EDTR component of what is listed there. So that's manufactured by GE Aviation and, according to GE's data sheet, is deployed on one of the world's most advanced tactical fighters.
Which would that be?
Oh, the F-35. Surprise, surprise. Now, the CTOL nose wheel ASSI is comprising the F-35 landing system, and that's manufactured specifically and only for the F-35 by Honeywell. And so in the Senate estimates back in October, the Defence Department reps reiterated, I think it was Jeffries and Diebel, reiterated that F-35 components that are exported from Australia are part of a global supply chain that is owned by the US government and managed by Lockheed Martin.
Yep.
And so we've spoken about that on the show before. But the inclusion of these parts, the inclusion in this listing of the V3HI and ML-10A on these listings refer to the intersecting munitions lists of the US and European Union respectively, and specifically to the aircraft component subsections. So what this tells us is the same thing that the government has been saying over and over for the last couple of years, that the inclusion of those terms highlights that there's an intersection of a global supply chain where parts for the F-35 are located in warehouses in the US, in the Netherlands, and of course here, up there at Williamtown.
And we started telling you about this before AUKUS, as soon as the F-35 program was announced.
Yeah.
This is not new information.
It's not new information. And so given like the inclusion of those terms says that the government has absolutely no control or say over when and where these parts go.
Mm.
And so the parts and the components, and we really aren't sure, and we've been trying to look into this, but we haven't been able to find anything, as, you know, commercial in confidence, of where in the contractual process the ownership of those parts by the US begins. So whether that is in the signing of the contract with the company, or whether that is when it leaves the manufacturing facility, or whether it's in the intellectual property during the design and development phases. We don't know when that transition of ownership takes place. But they aren't owned by Australia and they aren't owned by the companies. And so therefore, when we continue to call for the government to stop exporting F-35 parts, it kind of becomes a bit of a Sisyphean quest, I guess.
Yeah.
In that we'll get the same responses, because they've been given the same responses, changing them slightly, but their talking points largely haven't changed around this.
Yeah. And the last, I don't know, it was last week or the week before, we talked about the Senate Estimates Committee hearing, where they kept saying that it's nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
They kept saying this is being managed by Lockheed Martin on behalf of the US government, and the Australian government has no role to play. Now, this is outrageous.
It's outrageous. And it's not to say, like, the Australian government, what it has done in relation to this has signed, has legislated, and has created the environment through the various treaties and trade agreements, industry introductions, various mechanisms to involve Australian businesses in these supply chains. Mm.
It's greased the wheels and it's pushed the wheels, but it hasn't built the wheels.
Yeah. And so it doesn't absolve them. And so when the Australian businesses enter these supply chains, the Australian government relinquishes any control over them. So it doesn't absolve them of the complicity or responsibility.
Yeah. And I don't want to bring everything back to dollars and cents, but this is all these introductions and all this networking and all these, this is all being done through your taxpayer dollars, my friends and other listeners. All right, this is like at a time when essential services are closing, at a time when we've looked for such cheap deals for our 000 emergency services that people are dying because they can't get through to a contracted operator. This is where the money's going. Another billion is going next month.
A billion US,
that's 1.5 billion Australian, to the US to help them with their shipbuilding industry.
And as you say, on the taxpayer dollar, I think it's something like 4.1% of the defence budget is pay, which equates to about $2.4 billion, is for consumable items and business travel.
Yeah.
So things like Team Defence Australia, when they go off and spruik Australian companies at all of these arms fairs around the world, things like Avalon, it's 4.1% of the budget is paying the airfares and the hotels and the luncheons and the wining and dining.
Yeah. And the specialised adult entertainment that they no doubt partake of. And the admirals from the US Navy, who the Australian government is putting up in Australia, putting them here to advocate on our behalf with their boss. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the SDA in the fucking union movement fucking being paid for by the supermarkets. But anyway, let's not go there.
I guess this, you know, what we're talking about here is when the Australian government says, like, it's the F-35 export, component export, Australia has nothing to do with it. And so I guess it's just important that we're asking the right questions.
Yeah. But look, when we're talking about the F-35, I want to point out that Francesca Albanese has been doing chat shows around the traps lately. And she was on Tucker Carlson's show, not one I watched, but you pointed out to me the Instagram clip. And she was saying that, talking about the sanctions that have been put on her, she can't even have a bank account anywhere in the world because of the SWIFT system. But she's saying that as long as she was condemning the genocide, she was okay. But it's not until she started talking about the companies profiting from the genocide that she started being sanctioned and shut down and not allowed to travel and all that kind of stuff.
Sounds
all right.
Familiar, doesn't it?
Now, this is exactly what happened to you and I, mate.
Yeah.
When we started doing the Palestine rallies, it was okay. People were happy that. As soon as we started talking out about, you know, when we raised the issue of the F-35 parts 2 years ago last weekend, that have been used, when we started talking about the company, naming names of the companies, naming names of the directors, that's when all the renewed, you know, you've heard the bullshit that's been said about me and some about Mercedes and, you know, and about renegade activists and all the rest of it. This is where it's coming from. I mean, we broke. We're sans culottes. So they can't, it wouldn't do them any... It wouldn't do them any good to freeze our bank accounts. They could just call us rapists and child molesters and bugger everything else instead, you know, which is, you know, the what they do. But this is it. It's the companies that are there. And I want to bring it back to say that, you know, we need to stop these companies. And the good folks, I mean, look, the good folks at both GetUp and Amnesty International, now, AI, have started campaigns about particular weapons being exported to Israel from Australia and calling for their banning and calling for the exports to stop. Now, we're in full support of those initiatives that highlight the Australian government's complicity, but, and it's a big but, what these kind of campaigns, the danger they, the damage they do in some way, alongside highlighting the complicity, is reinforce the lie that Australia is a democracy that has any say whatsoever in how its industrial base is utilised by the Western war machine. By saying we should ask the government to do that, to do A, B and C, what we're doing is making a statement saying our Australian government has the power to do A, B and C. But it hasn't.
It hasn't.
It hasn't. So we really need to be careful, as you said, of which questions we ask.
Yeah, and how we ask them and what information we get. We need to know what these contracts are.
Yeah. I mean, I was asked, there was a forum in Coburg Town Hall last summer.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember when it was, but it was last summer. I remember it was hot. And as I walked in, someone asked me what local council area I lived in. I told them. And they asked me to sign a petition. I said, what for? And they said, to stop arms companies operating in this city council. I said, but I don't agree with that. And they said, what? They looked at me, they know who I am. I said, I don't agree. Whether we like it or not, weapons exports, weapons manufacture is a legal practice in Australia.
Mm.
Do we really want to give local councils the right to say what can and can't legal practices can't happen within their local council area? I mean, it won't be the weapons companies that are stopped if we give them that right. It'll be the safe injecting rooms. It'll be anarchist bookshops. It'll be all kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If we're implying that the Australian government has the power when indeed they don't.
Mm.
And it doesn't help anything other than raising public awareness and, look, let's be frank, having these organisations be able to collect people's emails and addresses so they can send out fundraising request forms come Christmas time. Let's be honest. It's just before Christmas. Anyway, that's the cynical joke.
Anyway, but if we're talking about Australia relinquishing as a sub-imperial power, the Osman talks have just happened this week, and that was just...
The Osman talks. The US has just released its 2025 NDAA, the National Defence Authorisation Act. It's one that comes out every year, and what it does is it authorises the spending for the next year. And now this NDAA is based on its new strategic policy paper, the new Trump Doctrine, along the lines of Make America Great Again, the MAGA crew, and it seeks to put America first and redirect its efforts towards the Western Hemisphere and, you know, protecting the fatherland. I mean, it'll only just stop short in language, if not intent, of stating the fatherland uber bloody alles. But while this does indeed signify a marked change in how the Department of War is deployed around the world, we must not lose sight of the basic fact that it signifies only a change in the operations rather than in the basic raison d'etre of global capital's military, which remains the same, as we've said too many times on this radio show, to facilitate the accumulation of more and more of the world's wealth and resources into fewer and fewer hands. You know, it's just a refocus of how they're doing it, and it's been largely seen as a reaffirmation of the Monroe Doctrine, of the late 19th century, which was behind the expansion of US corporations into Latin America to start with, which wasn't so much against the countries of the region, but against Spanish and British interests. And a big part of it involved wooing those people who were opposing European imperialists. A lot of the anti-European imperialists, your Bolivars and the rest of it, actually welcomed US engagement. You know, because they were under the yoke of European imperialism. And it, when the US real intentions, I guess, became obvious and people started backing away, it was followed up by what was called the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, which came out of the Venezuelan crisis of 1902 when German forces were attempting to seize Venezuelan assets to recompense their corporate losses during the Venezuelan Civil War. And the Roosevelt Corollary basically proclaimed that it was only the US that could intervene in any disputes in the Western Hemisphere, in Northern, Central and South America. And this harked back to the concept of the US being established to oppose imperial European dominance in the Western Hemisphere. And look, if you were stupid, you might have fallen for that in 1902, you know. And that's when Roosevelt also sent out the Great White Fleet, which came to Australia, and he claimed that the biggest problem the Great White Fleet was going to have in its circumnavigation of the world was being killed with kindness by the Australians. And then we found out 60 years later that they were mapping our infrastructure while they were here in case they needed to invade because we were allies of Great Britain. But be that as it may.
But I mean, it's kind of par for the course
It's par for the course.
Yeah.
It's the same shit we've been dealing with. And this new alignment is now being called, in reference to the Roosevelt corollary of the Monroe Doctrine, it's been referred to as the Trump corollary. And what it does is to explicitly state, not merely imply, but state, that the role of US allies is to be a forward line in the defence of the American homeland. And I don't see this as a departure from the joint interest with Europe, but just as an end to the post-World War II period where the US painted itself as the world's police in order to ensure that Europe remained reliant on US military power and economic power. As we've seen in the Ukraine, this reliance is now complete and Europe is, you know, quite frankly, scrambling around like someone's pissed on their ant's nest, to be frank. So bearing all that in mind.
So
Penny Wong and his gormlessness, who apparently is still defence minister. Hasn't anyone sacked the guy yet? Not yet? No, anyway.
No, he's climbing to he's trying to climb to the top.
Penny Wong and his gormlessness answered the summons to Empire this week and went to Washington to get their marching orders. You can go and read their statement yourself. But in short, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir, increased cooperation in cybercrime, a bigger role for Australia and work with the Philippines to counter China, and, of course, helping to finance and fast-track a new critical minerals mine and processing plant for the US-based company Tronox to directly supply US arms manufacturers with the critical minerals they need from new mines in Australia. And, yeah, as I said earlier, the continuing flow, $1.5 billion Australian dollars to be paid next month so that we might one day, in the not-too-distant future, get a submarine. And it's coming at a time when not only the international community, but many in the US Congress are decrying war crimes in Venezuela. You know, there was a time not that long ago when WikiLeaks put out collateral murder video, and it showed the first-person shooter film of civilians getting massacred by US troops. That led to a whole lot. That's what led to Julian getting thrown in jail for all those years. That's what led to assets being seized and frozen and, you know, rah, rah, rah. Now they're putting out those first-person shooter snuff films themselves.
Yeah, over Twitter or X.
X, you know. And the Australian government not only goes along with this business as usual, but increases our involvement in the US war machine. Last week is gormlessness. Announced plans for a new Lockheed Martin factory in South Australia's Port Wakefield, specifically to supply the US with missiles. Now, these will probably be too late to be used in Venezuela, but Trump has already warned Colombia that they could be next unless you keep your friggin' mouth shut.
Well, and part of the Osmin talks of that happened this week was partnership on the guided weapons and explosive ordnance.
That's right.
Like, and as you said, critical minerals. I will just mention on Monday morning, I'm going to be on Women on the Line.
Yep.
Talking about critical minerals.
What time's that?
8:30.
8:30 on Monday morning.
Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack.
No,
but
no,
sort
good.
Of throw that in there.
Let people know.
But it's part of the guided weapons and explosive ordnance, the increase of US troops in Darwin, reinforcing and Amberley. I don't even know what the words are. Just building
developing.
It out. Developing. Yeah. For increased rotation of US bombers, like the B-2 bombers, which are the same ones that were used in, I think, was it Operation Hyacinth or whatever it was called, yeah. Where, when they attacked Yemen?
Oh, yeah. And on Amberley, I've got to say, on Amberley and the other one, Tyndall, mm-hmm. in Catherine, you know, some years ago... before you joined the show when I was doing Robbie Lonesome, I pointed out that Scott Morrison's Indigenous Advice Bureau was being used to give Indigenous companies tender-free jobs building for the military across Northern Australia. And I got attacked left, right and centre by people on the left for attacking Indigenous-owned businesses. All right, and Indigenous compliant businesses. These Indigenous businesses have in the last month been stripped of their certification and taken through the federal and the Northern Territory criminal courts for defrauding the Department of Defence. All right, so that's just as an aside, by the way. You heard it here first. Yeah. I said it 4 years ago that these people were ripping off the taxpayer dollar by pretending to be blackfellow-owned companies. And now... 4 years later, the Northern Territory and federal governments are agreeing with me. Funny that. Who'd have thunk it? But anyway, it's time we admitted, friends and other listeners, Australia does not exist as a decision-making power, but merely as a managerial outpost of the US-based global capital system. A satrapy, if you will. That's all I've got to say on the matter. Because we want to talk about other things.
We do want to talk about. So regular listeners will be aware, and I think it's probably a good segue, you know, talking about this real solidification of this idea of the homeland and protecting the American homeland. So we've had a bit of a blowy in the window for a little while, and it's called Palantir.
Oh.
And so a couple of months ago we spoke about Palantir, some listeners might remember, and its role in the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation and, of course, with the Israeli military, which extends prior to the last 2 years. It's intensified in the last 2 years, and particularly in 2024, but Palantir have had offices in Israel since 2015.
Yep.
And so at the time we spoke about what was called the Great Plan, and that has essentially now been watered down to Trump's 20-point peace plan that was passed by the UN Security Council.
Yep.
So echoing the really explicit fascist overtones of the American homeland, Palantir CEO Alex Karp is really pushing big tech towards a techno-militarist bent in protecting US global hegemony.
Yeah.
And he makes no secret of it. So from developing specific software for deportations and ICE, which Palantir have done as a sole source, it is being planted in... Palantir being planted in Gaza through the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, entering in a contract with the Israeli military to, quote, this is a quote, optimize the kill chain. with what it's called its Artificial Intelligence Platform, or AIP, and I want you to remember that. Palantir is more likened to a swarm of locusts.
Yeah, it's
coming. So it's recently been exposed that Palantir's tech was used in Israel's pager attacks in Lebanon.
Yep.
And at the time we were talking about the first iterations of Trump's peace plan, we said that the companies like Palantir will be the first in line in the formation of what can really only be described as like the investment de-risking of Palestine for the tech bros' wet dream and for Israel's ongoing occupation.
That's what it's about.
And so as part of that, the early stages of that so-called peace plan, the Civil Military Coordination Center, or the CMCC, established by the Central Command, U.S. Central Command, is located 20 k's from Gaza's border, and it's been set up to oversee the International Stabilization Force. And so, lo and behold, Palantir's Maven tech is embedded within the CMCC, and it's harvesting surveillance data that it collects from satellites, battle situations, and, of course, from Palestinians seeking aid to centralize its command and control operations.
And it's getting this information as well through Pine Gap, sucking up the information through the satellites over Gaza.
And so to most of us, it's beyond horrific. But to the Australian government and the cyber threat offensive of the Australian Signals Directorate, they're frothing at the bit to get a piece of more of Palantir, more than they have already.
Yeah.
So late last month, Palantir announced that it had been granted Information Security Registered Assessors Program, or IRAP, protected status. So what that is that a company needs to, that's a specific to Australia, and it gives Palantir's Foundry platform, the Vantage platform, the currently already in use by the ADF, and its AIP platform, the same one used by Israel to target and make automated decisions to kill Palestinians, protected status to be used and contracted to Australia's most high-level government agencies. So alongside Palantir was CyberArk and Wiz, both Israeli-based companies that are now owned by US firms. And that's just in the last couple of months that the Australian government have given protected status to these companies to be embedded into the highest levels of government agency.
Well, just as well they're all good Christian men.
So we're almost out of time, but embedding Palantir further into Australia's government structures alongside existing contracts that it has with Coles and Westrac, and when coupled with the weak AI plan, the data collection exercises that will definitely come as a result of the social media ban, and the growth of data centres pushed by Australia's cybersecurity forward projection, which is the second highest growth area for data centres after the US, it's a pretty bleak picture.
That's all we have time for.
That's all we have time for. It's another upbeat a Friday rave, but we'll be at you next week.
If you're not depressed enough.
So stay tuned for Radio MMT, and we'll catch you next week.
Hey, ciao.